This podcast is brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. This is Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Innovative thoughts from baseball's best coaching minds from around the world. Brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. Now your host, former USA Baseball National Team Coach, Peter Caliendo.
Hey, good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, wherever you're at in the U.S. and around the world. Welcome to the show today. This is Baseball Outside the Box, the show that loves to interview baseball's best coaching minds who love to challenge the status quo. We're live on Facebook. We're live on YouTube. If you're on Facebook, you're only going to see my ugly mug. So understand that if you want to see both our guest and myself, go to YouTube, Peter Caliendo. Again, YouTube, Peter Caliendo. Do me a favor. When you're there, hit the subscribe button and then that bell, because that just helps us get the show out. We got over 100 shows for free there. And the audio, you know, goes on baseballoutsidethebox.com. And of course, we are on Facebook. If you're on Facebook, if you have any questions, just type them in the comments section. Looking forward to some questions. We're going to have a great show today. First of all, don't forget YouTube. Second, Caliendo Sports International, honey, Dominican Republic. We're a 16-year-old ball club. We need a couple more ball players who want to join us for training in the Dominican and also some competition. That's during Christmas break, so join us. Coaches want to go and see where the Dominican players actually practice, where they actually get better at great competition, great practices. Join us. Email me at caliendo19@gmail.com. All right, today we are heading to my great friends in Canada, and you know I've been to Canada a lot. I'm with BC Baseball, do the caravan, travel all over Canada, have been lucky to speak at a lot of conventions. To me, probably one of the best baseball countries when it comes to long-term development in the sport of baseball, whether it's athletic development, the sport itself, just outstanding. They're leaders in long-term baseball development. And I want to introduce you the founder and director of the Performance Lab from Toronto, Canada. Good friend of mine, Rick Johnston, he introduced us, and I'm looking forward to this because development is so important. We're going to talk about sports science. We're going to get into a bunch of stuff about baseball development. Let me welcome a good Italian. Yes, folks, I know you hear it again. Another Italian on the show that, you know, I don't pick that. I just pick great people, and some of them happen to be Italian. Let me introduce Carmen Felice. Carmen, how you doing, buddy?
Oh, great, man. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Sorry for the long intro. And I know if I'd have read your bio, the intro would have been 3 hours because, man, you have done so much. You've gone obviously to some great universities, in the U.S. and in Canada. I want you to tell the audience, give us a little background, because I would have not given it a good justice in telling people what you've done and what you're currently doing right now. So give us a little background.
Yeah, sure. So right now I'm the director of the Performance Lab, which is my baby. So that's based in Toronto, Canada, although we're starting to probably do a little work closer to you in the U.S. Starting next year or when COVID starts to die down. So right now our focus is mostly on sports science and rehab. Before this, I spent 10 years living and working in California, so mostly based out of L.A., Orange County area. I spent quite a bit of time working at two of the premier sports science centers down in the States, one in Santa Barbara named the Peak Performance Project, and one in Menlo Park named Sparta. So spent quite a bit of time grinding my teeth at the sports science thing, and I spent quite a bit of time working in the States, working with different teams, different organizations, a lot of Olympic teams and Olympic athletes, and decided to, I'm an Italian kid by home and grew up in Little Italy, Toronto, so decided it was time to come back home and move back in early 2010. So I opened up the lab in 2011 and kind of gone from there. So by trade, I'm a chiropractor. That's where I started. Graduated in 2004. And then from there, actually, I know we're kind of hitting on the Italian front. I actually moved to Italy for a little bit. Yeah. That was the intention. And I was going to work out there. And I was there for a very short time. And then life took me back to California. And it was a good move. It was a great move. I started to work a lot with pro baseball when I was down there based on the places I was working at. So it was a good introduction to baseball. And then once I transitioned to Toronto, it ended up being that I started to shift sports a little bit. So I started to work a lot more with pro hockey and then became the director of Tennis Canada. So it's been great because they're awesome run. And now we work a lot with junior baseball. So it's kind of like one of our biggest gigs is junior baseball. So developing a lot of the kids who kind of want their dream is to come down to the U.S. and play at a D1 school. And that's the dream for a lot of the Canadian kids. So working with these kids to kind of get them to reach their goal is awesome for myself and my team, and just kind of helping them to kind of along the way and using the skills we've learned in other sports and also just in terms of the process and the technique. So my thing has always been to kind of like use tech and use like our know-how and use them as much as we can, use every like thing that, you know, to me, it's always been about thinking outside the box and trying to get things and not looking at things like in such a cookie cutter way, but kind of bring a bit of a different perspective. Are there different ways we can kind of think of something to kind of like help the process along or help the sport along? So that's kind of been it. That's kind of where me in a nutshell.
Perfect. Great way to start. And I love it. You know why? Because first of all, you mentioned some key areas. One, multiple sports. I want to get into that in a minute. But give our audience an idea, you know, because, you know, you're talking about tennis. Obviously, there's a lot of similarities with tennis and possibly baseball, but a lot of sports have some similarities. But give our audience an idea. When we're talking about sports science, okay, I mean, I think people understand some of sports science, but really, what does it really mean when you're talking about using sports science specifically for baseball?
100%. So I think the interesting thing about sports science, everybody thinks that you know, it's a bunch of research in the laboratory and they got, you know, their suit jackets on and that's obviously not me. Like I'm in a t-shirt, I have tattoos off the wazoo, and it's just like it's we're more on the applied side, and that's something I like to stress. So there is the sports science side that is very dedicated towards research, and then that's typically done at the university level. But that's kind of like what most people think about when the term sports science kind of hits. We're more on the sports science side that's applied. So we're on the field. We want to be on the field, on the pitch, on the diamond, on the mound. And we kind of want to be implementing strategies to really like improve performance. So from my perspective as a sports scientist, we're answering questions. So for me, it's about how to help the coach, how to help the athlete, whether it's a pitcher or a hitter, to answer the question that he has or she has and be able to help improve their performance. So I'll just give you an example. You see a bunch of funny cameras behind me. So inside here, when it comes to the way we approach baseball is we kind of try to reimagine it in terms of how we approach it. So we take a very like scientific approach to it. So we tend to use we implement two strategies. One is I think I might be able to show you. Yeah, there you go. So you see a mound behind me. This is kind of our setup behind me. Inside that mound, it's a little bit of customized. Me and my dad did that. And it's a custom mound that we implemented a force plate inside where the rubber is. It's funny. So we have a custom mound that I'll tell you a funny story. So like we bought a mound, and I was talking to RJ. I'm like, hey, RJ, I need a mound. He's like, this is the mound you get, Carmen. This is the mound you get. So we got the mound, and I'm talking to the guy who sold me the mound. I said, hey, look, like can I put a force plate in? He's like, yeah, no problem. So we get it in. Nobody in Toronto wants to touch it. So I have to get like it. So my dad's by my office, and he says, Carmen, I'll do it. Fine. And he's just like the most anal, like OCD guy I've ever met. So we were able to embed a force plate right in the mound. Works perfectly. Wow. And above that, so we have a 12 camera system that's three dimensional. So that basically surrounds the mound if we're dealing with a pitcher. The same thing when we're dealing with a hitter, we just kind of use a batter's box. And we're in the process of embedding our force plates within the batter's box. So all of a sudden, it gives us great insight into the baseball player. Our goal is to be able to gather data. We want to know everything we can about the player, and the more we know about the player, the more we can help him or her. So for us, when it comes to, let's just take pitching as an example, we'll get a player into a full it's a custom suit, or we put the dots on the player, so the reflection dots. From there, we're able to kind of like measure them at high speed. So for me, one of the biggest things in all sport, and one of the things like I put the performance lab's name on is when I sat down and really like worked at my old offices or where I worked at with athletes, the biggest thing I noticed is that for an athlete to really be truly be diagnosed or be measured, we really need to look at them at their environment. And it's not an environment, it's in the gym. It's really about the environment on the mound. or in the batter's box, like to be at their highest potential, to be running at their highest speed, to be serving at their highest potential or skating at their highest potential. So we set up a system here where we can do that. So whether it's we're going onto a tennis court and setting up on a tennis court, whether we're going on ice and measuring like an NHL team on ice, that's kind of what we do. So when it comes to like youth baseball, what our goal is to implement the same strategies we would for a professional athlete. We just kind of like shift them over to like focus a little bit more for what the needs of the younger athlete is. So for if we got a young baseball pitcher, they're top of class, they're doing well. RJ will kind of send somebody, or somebody will kind of like a baseball coach will send somebody, and we work with some great coaches and they have great eyes. But for us, all of a sudden, it gives that coach, it gives us the ability to see what the naked eye can't. So the cameras move faster than the eyes. The force plates see things that unfortunately the humans can't. So all of a sudden, it gives us huge insight to be able to see how an athlete's moving, how they're pitching, like where the faults are, where the energy leaks are. So we're creating a system where we want to be able to analyze a baseball player in different ways to then be able to then work with the coaches and the strength trainers and everybody else to kind of create a pathway to go from A to B to kind of get them better. So in here, we'll test the pitchers, we'll have the pitch, they're under 3D motion capture, we have force plates embedded into the mound, we gather all that data, we do some other subsequent testing on force plates and some other stuff we do with our algorithm testing. We gather all that data, and then we provide basically a very custom suit. And that's the best example I can give you is that we create a very specific custom suit for that individual player to get them better as fast as we can. So whether that's to be able to like, the ultimate sexy answer is I want velo. I mean, that's the magic question we always get, right? Like, hey, Karin, can you give me some velo, right? And that's the magic question, right? But a lot of times we get the kid who just like, we had the kid who, can't throw a curveball because their arm slot can't get into the right angle. So we want to figure out why isn't that? Why can't he get there? Or we get a kid who's chronic issues with elbow pain or UCL pain or is coming off of Tommy John or whatever that is. So what we want to be able to do is just kind of figure out the best, fastest, most efficient way to kind of get the athlete better.
Carmen, before we get into, I want to get into some really minor details on some of the movements, whether it's hitting or pitching.
Yeah.
You look at all kinds of sports. Are there any I'm assuming there's some correlation with other sports with similar movements. Is there an advantage to training in other sports to advance your baseball development?
Absolutely. So short answer is yes. So there's a lot of like neuro work right now being done. And it was funny because I did a course right now, actually through the guys from Barcelona Soccer. And yes, as long as the motor engram is not counteracted, it's actually done well. So if you're playing sports that are like very somewhat similar, have some carryover value in which the movement patterns are very similar. So you often hear of like people using like the footwork of soccer and then carrying it over to like a baseball. You know what I mean? That's fantastic because that carryover value is there. The only time is like if the sport is so different that it's like 100 complete 180, then the research isn't necessarily there to prove it. But a lot of times, yes, we try to advocate a lot of like a multidisciplinary sport, especially at a young age. So for me, like once the ages, like at a young age, I tell parents all the time, like let your kid play as many different sports as possible. Don't worry about pigeonholing them at a young age in terms of one sport. As the kid gets older, then it becomes a little bit more, you need a little bit more specificity in terms of making sure that the sports kind of like have carryover value and have like some similarities. So that way the motor engrams stay true. But for the most part, no, absolutely. You kind of want to play as many different sports as possible.
Yeah. And are there sports, because, like you said, soccer with the footwork, I don't know, possibly hockey with the slap shot, the rotation. But are there sports that also can, I guess I'm looking for an avenue to balance the muscles also, because here in the U.S. we play 365 around the year baseball, yeah, which is getting crazy. And I know medical people have said, you can't just play one sport at a very young age because you're not, forget about the burnout, that's one area, but what about the damage we're doing to the body? Can you talk about that?
100%. And it's something that we're following up here as well, which is we're falling into that trap. Canada, if for better or for worse, because the weather is so harsh up here, it's something where, like, for baseball, for example, a lot of the kids are almost forced to kind of like get into a different sport because you can't go outside and it's 30 below. It's just like, it's not happening. Because of that, there is that, but you're absolutely right. You don't want to like overexhaust the tissue. So that way, basically, you know, somebody's throwing, 365, because it's damaging to the tissue. So the variety of the different sports, like, shifts the focus of the tissue a little bit. I also am a huge believer that, especially, again, depending on the age group we're talking about, spending time and doing physical stuff, whether for the older ages in the gym, like lifting, in the younger ages, just doing basic movements and play is very important, just to kind of get the movement patterns right. Like, especially for the younger kids, like, you just want to play. Like, I mean, when I was a kid, I grew up, like, I was an Italian kid, stereotypical Italian kid who played soccer. Like, my parents never brought me to, like, quote unquote practices like everybody else. At the same time, right, we were told to go and play. You know what I mean? Yeah. And I think now, like, sports is so, like, conditioned in segments. It's just like, I got to bring my kid to soccer practice and I got to bring my kid to hockey practice. And back in the day, it was just like, just go outside and play. And I think right now it's just like so specific in terms of what the kids are being told. I like to see just kids go outside and play, like, just go run, jump, hopscotch, like do a bunch of stuff that just gets them moving and just participating in different movement patterns is fantastic. Yeah.
Alan Embry, who was World Series champion left-handed pitcher with the Boston Red Sox, mentions, basketball can give you, I guess, body awareness. So there's a lot of benefits. He actually played three sports. And every major leaguer we talk to, either on the show or a coach, always says, and I remember seeing statistics, 96 to 97% of, major league players were multiple sport athletes. But I guess my question is this, because with 3D motion, I think a lot of people understand what 3D motion is. You've seen a lot of science behind that. It's been around a little bit. But now the new technology seems to be force plates. So can you explain what force plates do? I know everybody can't afford them, but what they do in comparable to the 3D, how it works together with that?
Yeah, 100%. So you're right. So the force plates are starting to come on the scene a little bit. And what it is think of a bathroom scale. Like, at the end of the day, that's kind of what it is. I'll tell you a funny story. When I was bringing my plate from the States, actually from Buffalo to Canada, I got caught at customs. You can only imagine, right? But the guy at the back who was bringing me over the commercial side, he's just like, what the heck is this? And so I'm, look, man, I work with a lot of athletes and it's a force plate. And he's just like, wait a minute. Of course I know what that is. It's like a scale. So, like, it's basically a bathroom scale. The only difference is, like, as opposed to your bathroom scale, which measures your weight going this way, this one measures it in every direction, especially the better ones. So there's a difference. I'll say, so, like, there's what are becoming popular now are what are called force pads. So force pad is typically a little bit more inexpensive. So I usually recommend those for when a team or an organization can invest to the nth degree. So that measures a lot, like, more just like in a vertical, like if I wanted to measure my vertical jump and see how high or how much force I can produce this way. But one of the big key takeaways I can ever say is when it comes to baseball, 100%, one of the biggest things we see is that what's even more important than the amount of force you can produce this way is the amount of force you can produce that way. So it's so important for us to be able to gather the amount of data you can to gather in terms of how much force. So if I'm a baseball pitcher, it's how much force I can produce towards the side of the rubber. And if I'm a batter, it's how much force I'm producing like away from the pitcher. So it's that force, because it's the physics of every force has an equal and opposite reaction. So the more force, we see with our pitchers, is there's a really good correlation between their stability, their velocity, and how much lateral force production. And this carries over to, like, in terms of to even go into your other question of, like, the carryover of sport, there's a huge carryover towards something like creating that lateral force production, things like tennis, things like hockey, to be able to create that lateral force production and then be able to emulate it and push it into the other direction and then create it into a rotational force. So in short, yeah, it's a very, very high powered sensitive scale that measures force in the direction. From there, then it takes somebody like me to be able to then analyze that, the force plate readings, to be able to say, okay, great. And the better people who are able to do this are able to kind of figure out, you know, some insight. You know, is the athlete, a little bit more twitchy? Is the athlete a little bit more linear than they are rotational? What's their impulse rate? So there's so much different things that we can extract from force plate data. And I'll be honest with you, I've been very, very fortunate. It's my old my old mentors in California who did a lot of the science behind it, who wrote a lot of the software for it, who developed it. So the insight I have from this is quite a bit from them. So it so there's quite a bit of information that you can gather from force plate.
And I know, folks, I know, you know, a lot of times we'll, you know, I know there's coaches out there and parents that'll say, you know, well, but this is high tech, I don't have this technology. But understand, if you're able to get to a lab that has this type of technology, and tell me where I'm going wrong here, Carmen, but, you know, what we're trying to do, it sounds like, we're trying to identify, is the youngster starting off in the right direction when it comes to proper movements? So that way, not only can he or she be more successful, but safety is a big issue. And, you know, especially in baseball with pitching nowadays, because everybody wants velocity. And we know that the ulnar nerve can't handle a certain velocity. The science has been there before on that. So if they are able to get to a lab, we determine this for these young kids. But now we still need the ability to use some type of methods, whether it be drills or identifying how are we going to make these corrections. How does that work?
100%. So our goal is to be able to just kind of give insight into like what, like diagnosing what, if there's anything that we're like suspected of, in terms of just like, hey, you know, Billy comes in the door and all of a sudden we see there's a high probability of him blowing out his arm. And we can do that now. So we have insight now in terms of like when we're, especially on 3D, we can kind of figure out, hey, look, like we see too much force being placed on the elbow or on the shoulder. It's actually come to a point where we've called, you know, a major league team and said, hey, look, this person's going to hurt his so-and-so. And it happened like right then. Wow. So the ability for us to be able to like really see, it's not like 100% like of the time, but our ability to kind of like really see the insight into the athlete is really high. So, and you're absolutely right. So then for the goal is to be able to say, hey, look, like when I get an athlete, what are their strengths? And then what are their weaknesses and what injuries am I worried about for this athlete? And then from there, we kind of develop a plan that's a lot of drills. And this, you know, it's nothing. A lot of times when we work with the team, it's the coaches who implement the strategies or put the kids through drills, and we'll sit and kind of talk strategy in terms of just like how to best implement the movements and patterns. It's something where, a lot of teams can't afford the tech or the all that stuff. But if you can just kind of like team up with an organization, that has it or that can work together with you. And I'll be honest with you, Pete, like it's something that is kind of like when I moved to Toronto, one of the biggest things was I really want to push the intricacy of like using science to really help athletes and help prevent injuries and kind of all that stuff. And one of the things that I alluded to before is we want to start kind of coming into the US and doing camps to kind of give like camps where like baseball pitchers can come in, we'll diagnose them and say, hey, or we'll kind of do testing on them and say, hey, look, here are your strengths, here are your weaknesses. Here's kind of what we're concerned about. Here's what we think you need to be able to do to kind of get better. So that's where we kind of see this is such a powerful tool. We've seen so many people come in on the hurt level. Mm-hmm. So our biggest thing is we want to prevent them from getting hurt to even start with.
Absolutely. And again, we keep saying on the show, it's a long-term development process. Now, the other aspect is, you're also able to determine a player's physical ability because, you know, some kids early on might be heavy. Some might be real skinny. Some might have some mobility issues or ankle issues. I mean, you're able to determine those areas. So that way now a person that understands how to strengthen those areas can work with that athlete on that.
100%. So our goal is, especially when the kids are young, to be able to, you know, we're not trying to get the munchkins in and trying to like get them to lift weights. That's not the goal. The goal is to be able to kind of like figure out like what makes this athlete special, what, where the weaknesses are, where the strengths are, and be able to kind of like be able to kind of improve upon their movement habits, improve upon their movement abilities or efficiencies, and just make them a little cleaner. And we see it, you know, I'll use the example of we were testing Rick's team, I think it was last Tuesday. And we have like a handful of kids who train at my facility pretty much like all season. And it was cool for us to see. And you got like, I've worked with like super high level pros and all that stuff. But like, I turned to like my coworker and said, man, this is so cool. We just saw a kid who we've had since the age of like 13 and now he's 16. Mm-hmm. And when we saw him, nobody gave this kid any time of day and he moved really, really poorly. And within like and now he's the kid who tested the best. Like he's just like, he absolutely like just crushed the testing and he did phenomenal. And for me, that was just like, it was a cool moment in time to kind of see like what we want to be able to do is not get the kids to kind of like necessarily make it to the majors. It's not the goal. It might be the goal for like long-term, but this is a slow process. As you said, you keep using the terms I love, which is it's a long-term development. It's not about the silver bullet that's going to get the kid to be able to go from zero to, you know, to where they want to be overnight. It's a long-term development process. To kind of get the kids to where they want to be able to go in a safe and controlled manner.
Absolutely. And I'm going to get to some of the movements. I'm going to ask you some questions and maybe what you learned from your, you know, doing all the work. And because at the same time, it's research too, as you're working, you're learning possibly some new things. But before you do, you called it baseball, you know, you said thinking outside the box, and that's why we call it baseball outside the box, because we like people that, and even coaches that think outside the norm of what they're doing. I'm going to throw something at you, and if you haven't done it, no big deal. But maybe it's a recommendation. You know, maybe it's something to think about. You maybe use Rick as a guinea pig. You know, but once you've done your research, like I said, the coach now has to implement certain drills to correct those movements. I was thinking, it just topped my head, but as you're talking, I wonder if we could take those drills that coaches are implementing according to, you know, what they think is going to help that player get better at, and use the 3D motion and the force play to make sure that the drills are actually drills that are accomplishing what their goal is. Does that make 100%. Sense?
100%. It's actually something that so when the kid tests in here, what we do is, so the way a lot of the kids do, so we have a handful of kids, or like more than a handful, but who train in-house. So what we do is, it's a testing system for ourselves too. That's what I always try to say, which is athlete comes in day one, they test, and then we're putting them through drills and movement patterns and everything. And then they're getting tested on our force plate every month at least. And we're using it. And sometimes, to be honest with you, it's every 2 weeks, maybe even every week, because we want to make sure those drills are working and the strategies we're doing are working. We're trying to collectively create a database now to be able to figure out like which exercises work best for X, which exercises, and we're closer.
Have you taken the drill and put it on video with force plate and 3D to see if that drill is accomplishing something good?
Yeah. So we should do it a little more. It's something where we've done for some, for sure. Cause we've actually created our own like exercises in here, like some stuff that we created. And so we've done the research behind to say, hey, look, we're getting the value out of it that we want. So it's something where we're trying to do more of it, because you're absolutely right. The value is there, and then be able to say, hey, look, this is what we've been finding with XY. See in terms of the movements.
Yeah, and I get it. You know, if a player 2 weeks later comes back is doing better, well, the drills probably are working. I get that. So it's kind of that's an evaluation in itself. So I think that's pretty neat. But what about through the time that you've been doing all this, whether it be because obviously you're focusing a lot on pitching and hitting, are there some things that you found that kind of, you know, you said, I didn't know that. I didn't realize the body does that, or we need to change our way of you know, teaching this a little bit because we found something on video. Is there anything new that you learned, I guess, as I'm getting at?
Let me think. I think the biggest two things that come to mind is to go back to that lateral force production in terms of how the body then. So I think the biggest thing I would say is the contact. I think the biggest thing we learn and we've been learning is that initial contact to the ground. We've always known how important it is, but we've been doing a lot of research in terms of just like the efficiency of the first contact and then how important that is to then get it going. So I think that's one. I think two, the amount of relaxation in an athlete. So in the stiffness in an athlete is really important for us to kind of tease out. We want an athlete to be really, really relaxed, to be able to kind of like explode and relax. What we find is that the key to the athlete success or the key to the athlete acceleration is their ability to almost decelerate or like relax themselves. So we want a huge impulse and then we want the body to actually like not impulse at the same rate, if not faster. So for us to be able to get that massive explosion and the massive under, like the slowing down of the muscle explosion, that's kind of what we're looking for. And baseball specific, like we've been, what our target's been, I would say for the last couple of years, like working a lot on the front leg. We've always known that to be the key factor in terms of pitching, in terms of like its decelerative factor. But we're just working on a couple of things right now in terms of just like some drills and some things that we're picking up on. In terms of just like the acceleration of the knee. Yeah, in terms of how the knee.
If you take pitching, so it's pretty clear that if you take pitching that when that front foot lands, when we're talking about ground force, that foot's got to be completely down before anything else occurs. What occurs after that? What have you seen occurs right after that?
What we really want to be able to see is the acceleration of the knee. So usually the knee's in a bent position for vast majority of pitchers. The best example I could ever say is like if you see somebody like a Verlander, watch him on a slow-mo, to be able to kind of like accelerate. Then we're looking a lot at not only the foot position and timing of the knee position, but also the acceleration of the knee straightening, and then its timing to the ball release. There's definitely correlation there. And then we're actually looking at positioning in terms of just like how to best then what exercises are we doing in the background that can best help get to the point A we're trying to get to. That's what we're really focusing on now is we know what the mechanics should be in terms of just like that front foot position, that front leg position. Now we're trying to figure out what's the fastest way we can get our pitchers to be able to execute that in a very timely, controlled manner. So we're working on some stuff in terms of just like movements and also some patterning, some like things that we're doing like back to back in the to potentiate certain movements to be able to execute it at a much faster rate. So that's kind of what's behind the scenes.
Yeah, and one of the most difficult things would be once you've identified that and you've done the drills, and again, this may not be your area, but I know one of the most difficult things is now making sure that, you know, that work that athlete's doing is transferring into a real game situation. But in essence, they're doing it full speed in the lab.
Yep, you got it. So what we try to do is like if we're working on like front leg stability, what we're gonna do is let me just throw this phone over.
Yeah, just tell them we're not taking calls on Baseball Outside the Box, folks. Sorry, today it's all Facebook Live. Type your questions on the comment section.
Sorry, Pete.
No problem.
Front leg stability, what we're trying to do first is like iron out any deficiencies in terms of strength value. So that's kind of things. And then what we're trying to do is then looking at, we look a lot at the timing variable in terms of just like what timing variable or what changes we have to make, especially related to the overall kinematic sequence of the movement of the pitch. And then what we're trying to do is then work on the speed of the whole movement as itself. So it's something that we're trying to improve upon as much as we can. So we feel like we've got a good handle on it. We think that our athletes are making great, like really good improvements on that. But it's something that we see as like a super key variable that we're always trying to like hone in and sharpen is that front leg. Yeah.
Hey, Carmen, I know, and the folks know a lot of times on the show, because I mentioned many times, and as you know, by email, we don't script the show. You don't know the questions. Yeah. You know, I like it that way, more of a conversation, because, you know, as you answer a question, sometimes something sparks in my mind, think, oh, I better ask this next question as you answer one. One that I'm thinking of is when it comes to hitting, I've always thought that, there's a lot of pressure. First of all, there's a lot of pressure on joints and doing anything, right? Yeah. But I always thought when you're taking a swing, there's got to be pressure on your elbow joints or joints in your arm, because, you know, going high velocity, when you talk about exit speed or bat speed, it's no different than throwing a baseball. So if I'm a right-handed hitter, you know, I'm swinging, this arm is extending. Well, what's the difference between throwing the ball and extending this way if I'm a sidearmer? Am I getting that stress? Do you see, when you look at the overall body, do you see a lot of stress in those areas in hitting, and where else might you see that stress?
Yeah, it's interesting. So what we do is because we have it on the 3D stuff, it's really easy for us to then be able to look at it by joint specific. So both in terms of the sequencing and timing, and then look at the what's called the angular velocity. I'm going to throw a fancy word at you, Pete. Yeah. Angular velocity of the joint. We're able to look at a lot of the forces on the area, and then also like the direction of the force, so to see if it's a problem. So it's a great insight for with us to be able to kind of like be able to do that. What we notice is that with a lot of the hitters, what we notice a lot is front hip. It's kind of it's the same thing as like for a pitcher is like the internal rotation of the front hip we see as a problem in a lot of hitters. It's like seems to be a huge point, which is that the hip isn't allowed to be able to turn into the front hip. And because of that, then they're usually blocked. So working on front hip mobility, so you'll see a lot of guys flare out a lot in terms of their foot. And we were just having this discussion with a lot of the young kids a few days ago, which is, you know, it's almost like a mimic pattern, which is they see their, you know, their heroes on TV and they have a massive foot flare. And but if you look at the timing of when the actual ball strikes the bat, the foot is actually like in a well positioned, and then they, you know, the style is different, and it's fancier and it looks cooler, and it's it all translates to like forces, mass times acceleration. So a lot of the smaller guys, like I'm not a big guy, I'm gonna need to put a lot more acceleration behind the ball. So there's a lot more impact for bigger guys. You know, they have much more mass behind them, so they can get away with energy leaks. While you see like smaller guys don't have the capability of getting away with energy leaks. So their timing tends to be a little bit smoother, a little bit cleaner. They tend to have, because they don't have as much of a fudge factor to be able to get away with things. Bigger guys, if their timing is good, they can lose a little bit of energy because they can create a little bit more energy. So their force is just much greater, because the force is mass times acceleration. That mass value is so much higher. And then somebody like me, then it's trying to get that. So I guess the long-winded answer to answer your question is we do see a lot of issues with shoulders and elbows for sure. Wrist is actually something, especially at the not elite level, we see, because the wrist take a bit of there's a lot more force in the wrist being distributed. In the front hip, we see a lot of issues in the front hip. So a lot of athletes are a little bit more cleaner, better at being able to compensate away from the front hip, but they're not as able to do that when it comes to like a wrist.
Okay. You know, folks, go to myperformancelab.com. Check it out. We'll put all the show notes up there. We'll put Carmen's background, all ways to reach him, his website. This could be a 10-hour show, obviously. There's so much behind everything that you're doing. I'm trying to highlight some areas, and I'm going to have you, if we miss something at the end here, you know, mention something that you think is very important to understand when it comes to coaches, players, or parents, whether it be pitching or hitting, and what you found from the lab. But, you know, my one concern, and it's always been this, and we've had some top experts talk about it, but not from the science lab standpoint, three-dimension force plates and all that. With the young kids, I don't know how much you've done on homework with your lab on this, and if you haven't, it's not a problem. Weighted balls is a big topic. And look, they work. It happens. You know, guys get faster velocity. My concern isn't that they work or don't work. My concern more is common sense. We know this. If you got bad movement patterns and you're using weighted balls, you know, somebody can prove me wrong, but I don't think that that's a recipe for success. I think you're going to damage yourself. And I may be wrong at that, and you could tell me that. My more concern is weighted balls for young kids, and also, you know, hitting weighted balls. They may not be real heavy, but heavier than the baseball. Hitting weighted balls or hitting a tire when you're swinging a bat at a real young age, what that could do for the joints, because sometimes we're trying to speed up that process when we don't need to speed it up. We need to slow it down and maybe pick that process up later. Does that make any sense what I said?
100%. Like, I think it's the question we, I would say for the last maybe like 4 or 5 years, we get it. That's probably the number one question I get asked by parents is, hey, what do you think about weighted balls or bio balls and all this stuff? And my answer is you know, the first question is, quote unquote, do they work? And I think that there's enough evidence to show that, yes, they do work. Then the question becomes is, how do they work? And I think the research right now, and there's a couple of good articles out now. I believe Mike Reynolds came out with a good article. And it's showing that the lag in the shoulder creates a little bit more lag is the current hypothesis in terms of like what the heck's going on in terms of why. To me, the question becomes, and I go back to use your words, Pete, which is this is a long-term development process. There's no such thing as quick money. There's no such thing as quick velo. And that's what my dad used to tell me, no such thing as quick money. So it's something where, like, I think where I think the industry is going is because velocity has become such a hotbed word. And I get it. Like, you know, coaches are looking for it. Scouts are looking for it. You know, university coaches, the whole gamut. I think the problem is that what we're doing is, and you got to remember, I'm a therapist by trade, so I still work in that context. The number of kids I used to see who used to come in with like who blew their arm out or blew their shoulder out or elbow because they were using weighted balls when they weren't ready, it was significant. So for me, is there a time and place for them? Yes. Are they meant for everybody? Absolutely not. When it comes to young kids, it is so absolutely vital that you pull the trigger when they're absolutely ready for it. And because
how
you're
do,
absolutely.
How do you know when you're ready?
For us, we put them through the gamut. So we have to clear them. We want to make sure that their movements are well, they're strong enough to be able to do it. They've hit a decent, like the puberty level is there. So what we want is we want kids who are physically mature enough to be able to do it. And not only physically mature in terms of that they hit puberty and all the rest of that, but we want them to be able to be strong enough to, and coordinated enough and have the right timing to be able to like actually execute it. So for us, it's about we see too much is that what I personally see too much is kids using weighted balls too soon. And they're not strong enough. They're not coordinated enough. They're just their movement patterns are poor. So it kind of leads to a bit of a bad recipe. And the thing is like you might have the odd kid who gets away with it. You know, they might have a friend who gets away with it and said, you know what, but, you know, Billy did it and he's got it like 3 or 4 more miles an hour and he never got hurt. And I guess my response to that is like what we don't know yet just because you haven't executed an injury within the time frame that you've used the weighted ball doesn't necessarily mean you haven't set yourself up for an injury a year, 2 years, 3 years down the line. You just don't know what the internal structure looks like pre-post weighted ball. And if there's going to be like, you're setting yourself up for a tear, a labral tear or whatever that looks like in the future. So I'm very, very cautious with my athletes, my baseball kids, and using weighted balls. I'm not necessarily, you know, I get a little bit of slack in Canada for, you know, like, hey, you're anti-weighted ball or you're, it's not that I'm anti-weighted ball. I'm just like, proper use in a well-executed plan. That's kind of what, you know, to me, like, you know, science dictates all. Like, I want the data to dictate all. And I want the kids to be able to use it in an environment that's controlled. And I want them to be ready for it.
Absolutely. That makes a ton of sense. And I know folks out there, I mean, I think sometimes we forget too, there's also a biological age with a lot of kids. You know, I might have a 12-year-old biologically is really 11, and I might have another 12-year-old biologically is 13 because of the structure of the body. And I love what you said. You know, long-term, we don't know what's occurring. So why start so early? And we also know from a pitching perspective, I think we've seen enough out there, folks, whether you're a parent, player, or coach, that movement pattern or mechanics that's essential to understand, to get that perfected. So that way the rest of it is a lot easier to do, whether it's weighted balls, whether it's throwing a curveball, whether it's throwing a changeup. All that stuff is much easier when you know the movement patterns are better. Have you found anything in hitting, anything special in hitting that folks, I don't know, because again, my concern would be, we're also using weighted bats in hitting, different weights. Well, if I got an 11-year-old that structurally isn't ready to swing a heavier bat, you got to have a concern there too, no?
100%. Like, I think there's been some studies on like using the rings on the batter's box and then using lighter bats. And there's a bit of a fudge factor in terms of just like the shows improvement. Yes, if you use a little bit of a lighter bat, it helps. And the question ultimately goes back to the same thing we were chatting. Is the athlete ready to be able to use it? And if the answer is no, then you don't do it. And to me, like, it's so important, especially at the young age. Like, I think that our job, not only like from a coach's perspective, from a therapist or as a sports scientist, is not only to kind of get the kids better, but also to make sure that they can play 5 years down the line. And be able to kind of make sure that they have that opportunity to be able to kind of like reach whatever goal or dream that they have. For me, it's such a hotbed factor that it's really important, I think, for coaches and parents to understand that it really is like there's no such thing as quick velo. It's really just about developing the movement patterns and you know, if you take any sport and that notion of just like massive repetition, clean repetition, then just like, you know, it's that, like, you hear you hear the stories of Tiger Woods hitting golf balls until, like, you know, the lights came out and then in the rain and all that. It's just like, to master the craft, you need to, it's repetition, clean repetitions over and over again. Trying to implement the variable to just kind of like be like, oh, I'm going to bypass this and try to just get a little bit, you're cheating the system a little bit. It'll work for a few people. You don't know what the variables are to help them. So to me, the better answer is to make sure that the technique is there, the technique is perfected, everything else is there. And then once you're ready, if you want to introduce that, then great, do it, but not until you're ready.
You know, and in saying that, I remember listening to an expert who could only find, it's interesting, could only, back to your multi-sport athlete that you talked about earlier, I could only find one golfer at the highest level that was not a multi-sport athlete. Most of them are all multi-sport athletes. I want to throw that in there because we're so, you know, we think that's so important for young kids to be multi-sport players.
100%.
Is it fair to say, when we're looking at the overall development of a player, when you're looking at your athletes, when we're talking about, and maybe not this in this order, but when we categorize it, movement pattern, strength, flexibility, nutrition, sleep, you know, the mental, emotional aspect, overall package, that's more important than some of the other things that we talked about.
100%. Like, I can't stress enough that, you know, kids should be playing different sports. Like, it's something that gives them exposure to different sports, different movements and all that stuff. There's plenty of time to specialize as kind of you go older and you kind of like figure out what you want to do. And even then you should be doing different stuff. Definitely. I think all those things are important. I think the other thing I would add, especially if you have older ages and once they get into almost a pro level, is working on the mental game. I think that's huge. When I take over an athlete, especially at the pro level, I try to surround themselves with a proper team. That team is always includes a really good therapist, a really good strength coach, a really good technical person, a biomechanist, a nutritionist, a sports psychologist. That's where we start. So once that team is around, then I'll fill in the gaps in terms of whether I think somebody else is needed. I might throw in a spring coach. I might throw in, you know, a different variable now and again, but everything, and I might even throw in sleep coach, depending on the event. Like when we were getting ready for the Olympics for the tennis over that got canceled. But one of the biggest things was literally able to handle sleep, transferring different zones and then in the environment, and then also being like that recovery process for an athlete is so important. So it's something where you know, you're just as good as the last time you recover. So if you haven't recovered, your next practice isn't going to be that good.
You know, and that's a whole nother show, isn't it? Recovery. It's so important nowadays that there's so much emphasis being put on that. Maybe we'll bring it back just on the recovery aspect. Carmen, you've been great. I do want to close it when, in some way where, you know, when you're talking about all the research, all the work you've done with all this technology, you know, what do we miss for our coaches and players and parents? You know, some advice, whether it be on pitching or hitting or overall development, some advice you want to leave them with that can really hit home to let them understand how important all this is.
Yeah, I think one would be always to have an open mind. I think for coaches especially is to like, I think some coaches, especially up here, break aside, they're a little bit more old school, and old school is good. But to be able to kind of like to be open-minded, to be able to kind of look at new things and look at possibly like new technology and new things that can kind of help give insight into the athlete. I would say that's one for sure. And then I would say just kind of like to kind of hit some of the highlights that we were discussing about playing different sports, I think is really, really key. Being careful, especially with the pitchers in terms of the number of pitches they've thrown, and just kind of keeping the arm healthy. And then as the athletes get older, to really focus on the strength side as well. Like I think all those things you mentioned in terms of nutrition and strength and recovery, all those things are part of the as I would any pro I've treated. And so any pro I've treated, I do the same, which is we're going to work on your nutrition. We're going to work on your recovery. We're going to work on all aspects of being a pro. You're just going to start a little sooner. So it's just that mentality to be able to kind of like start focusing on things at an early age is key.
All right, Carmen. Fantastic. Awesome show. Love it. Thanks for joining us. I know your time is precious. You got a lot of work to do. So thanks, man. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, Pete. Anytime.
All right. That is Carmen Felice. And if you want to know, it's Felice in Italiano. Italiano vuol dire, it means happy. So that's a great name. Carmen Felice, with the founder and director of the Performance Lab in Toronto, Canada. We'll put everything on the show notes for you. I want to thank Carmen for joining us. Special thank you to our producer, Brian Kroc, with the Lineup Media Group. Don't forget, folks, subscribe. YouTube, Peter Caliendo. Just hit that big red button like the hat. Help us out. Share the show. It really gets it out. If you can do that, we'd appreciate it. We got over 100 shows there. Don't forget, the audio goes on baseballoutsidethebox.com. Thank you, folks, for joining us on Facebook. Really appreciate it. Don't forget, if you want to see the full show, we see both of us and some things that some of the cameras that Carmen showed, go to YouTube, Peter Caliendo. All right, everybody. Been great. Love you. Make sure you stay safe. Get back on the baseball field. God bless y'all, and we'll see you on the next show.
This has been Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Listen online at baseballoutsidethebox.com and subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and all major podcast outlets. Join the conversation on Facebook and Twitter. Get all of our podcasts now at lineupmedia.fm.